All right, so we're going to begin here at three lines from the bottom on Chav Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continued to discuss the machloket that we saw between Abaye and Rava. And we had before in the Gemara with regards to the machloket between Abaye and Rava, but Hana Habalo Adam al Bar Kocho, that person who gets benefit against his will, we had two lashonot in the Gemara. The first lashon of the Gemara was, if he's mechavein, if he intends for that hana'ah, everybody agrees it's Asur. That's both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Lo Michavein, if he doesn't have Kavana for it, then Rabbi Yehuda is Oser. That's the Shitato. Rabbi Yehuda, who says Davar Sheinu Mitkavein is Asur. And Rabbi Shimon says it's Mutar. Their machloke between Abaye and Rovo is then in Efshar and Lo Michavein, where he had the chance to avoid it. Velo Michavein, but he is not Mitkavein for it, because Davar Sheinu Mitkavein. There, Abaye says it's Mutar. That's Rabbi Shimon Lashitato. And Rava says it's Asur because he says Rabbi Shimon agrees only in a case Delo Efshar. When it's not possible to avoid it, then he says Davar Sheinu Mitkavein matters. The Shlishna Batra, in the second Lashon, we said that in cases of Efshar and Mitkavein, so in a case of Efshar Mitkavein, everybody agrees it's Asur. In a case of Lo Efshar and Lo Mitkavein, everybody agrees it's Mutar. In the case of Efshar and Lo Mitkavein, and Lo Efshar and Mitkavein, there we have the machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In the case of Efshar lo mitkavein, we have a class machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says asur because it's davar sheinu mitkavein is asur. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar because davar sheinu mitkavein is mutar. In the case of lo efshar mitkavein, Rabbi Shimon's going to say it's asur because kavanah matters. And if you're mitkavein for it, it matters. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we have the machloket between Abaye and Rava. Abaye will say it's mutar because Rabbi Yehuda says mitkavein doesn't matter. It's a case of lo efshar and therefore it's fine. And Rava says no. Rabbi Yehuda still thinks mitkavein is problematic. He just says when it's a chumra, then lo mitkavein doesn't help you. So that's the difference in the two lishonot. What the Gemara is doing here is bringing down cases that are either proofs to Abaye or Rava or to one of the two lishonot. And they're bringing down cases which seemingly will bring us to a conclusion about this. The next case they bring is Tashma. Hichnisa the Rivaka. He joined the animal into a team of shvarim, into a team of oxen. Vidasha, and because it's with this team of oxen, then it goes ahead and threshes. Kishera, it still remains kasher. Bishvil shetinog vitidosh, if he puts it into the team of oxen in order that it should nurse as well as it should thresh, psula, then in that case it's psula. Over here we're speaking about, most likely, is a para aduma. That's what the Tosefta is speaking about. That's what Tosafot says. We're talking about a para aduma over here. And a para aduma, one of the requirements of para aduma is that it didn't do any work. So in the first case, where it did work, it was unintentional that it did the work, because it was put together with a team of oxen, but he didn't want it to do the work. In the second case, when he put it together with the team of oxen, he intended it for Tetinok, but also Tetidosh. He did have in mind that it would do some of this work in Psula. Vahocho. And this is a case, Delo Efshar, Vekamikavein. It's a case, it was unavoidable, because he needs to put it together with the team. He needs the child to nurse from the mother. He needs to put them in there. Vikamakavin, he intends for it to do disha, to thresh. Viktani psula. And the Mishnah says that that disqualifies it. So it's a case here of lo efshar and mitkavein. And nevertheless, we say psula. So if that's the case, then that supports the position in the second lashon, lo efshar and mitkavein is asur. That sounds like either it's Rabbi Shimon or it's Rabbi Yehuda, Alibi the Rabbi, who says it's asur. For Abaye, he cannot explain this inside of Rabbi Yehuda. The truth is, he could just say this is Rabbi Shimon, he wouldn't have a problem. But he wants to answer in terms of Rabbi Yehuda as well, and therefore he's going to give another answer. Now, Tosafot said again before, it says, I'm at Parah Duma, Rashi says it's talking about an Eglah Rufa. An Eglah Rufa has the same requirement that no work be done with it. The reason that Rashi probably says that is because the Gemara is going to bring Psukim to prove this, and the Psukim are from Eglah Rufa. Now, there is a Hekesh between them that makes their din the same, but nevertheless, since they brought the psukim from there, that's what Rashi says. But in the Tosefta, it sounds like it's talking about a para aduma. So he says, Shani Atam, it's different over there, because it says, Asher lu ubad ba mikol makom. Any work done by it is problematic. Since it used the term ubad, which is even the passive form of the verb, then it means no matter what the work is that's done by it, intentional, unintentional, it's problematic. Where it says, if that's the case, ihoch afele reisha nami. Then why in the case where you put it into the Rivaka and it was Dasha, where he had no intent for it, do we say it's Kshera? If any work that it does, no matter what, is problematic, Then why isn't the Reisha also problematic? So halo damya l'laha. Now, the Reisha is similar to this other case that we find in the Mishnah and Parah, which is shachen aleha of. If you have a bird that rests on top of the animal, kshera. Ala aleha zachar. If a male mounts it, psula. Then it's problematic. My taima. What's the reason for that? Samra papa. So Rapapa comes to explain the reasoning behind this Mishnah, which will also explain the difference in the previous Mishnah between why in this latter case where he had Kavanah it's problematic, and why in the first case where he did not have Kavanah that it was okay. Because Ktiv, Pasuk says, Avad. Avad is the active form of the verb. Vikarinan Avad. Had the Torah written the word Avad in the active form, and it was pronounced that way, Ad Avid Bayu, then until he physically does it or pushes the animal to do the work, then it would be problematic because that's the active form of the verb. It means that the owner would have to make the animal do the work in order for it to be classified as work. Iktiv, had the Torah written the word ubad, which is the passive form of the verb, vikarinan ubad, and you read it as the passive form of the verb, then afilu memela nami. Then no matter how the work was done, meaning even if a bird lands on its back or he puts into a team of oxen and ends up threshing, then it'd also be problematic because the requirement is simply that ubad, that work was done by it, no matter how it was done. Hashta dichtiv, but the problem, or it's not really a problem, but this is the result of what happens here, is that the pasuk writes it as avad. The word is spelled ayin vet dalid, which without nikudot you would pronounce as avad, which is the active form of the verb. Vikarinan, but we have a misora that the kri of that word is ubad, the passive form. So therefore, they darshin ubad dumya davad, that the passive work done by the animal has to be similar to the active form of the work. Ma avad denechle. Obviously, if he's pressing the animal to work, then that's what he wants. Af ubad denechle. Similarly, when it's in the passive form of the verb, it has to be something that the owner wants. It has to be something that he desires. It's very similar to a drusha that we have by Heksher, by Mashkim. There, the Torah writes itain, and it's pronounced yutan. And the Gemara there darshans also that it should be yutan dumya deitain, that the placement in the passive form, if it happens by itself, has to be similar to itain, which is that the owner wants it to happen. So similarly over here, the ubad that happens, if the work happens by itself, the animal by itself ends up doing work unintentionally, then only if the owner wants that to transpire will it be considered work. But if the owner doesn't want or he didn't intend for that work, then it's not problematic. And that's the differentiation here. When the bird sits on the back of the animal, yes, it's doing work passively, meaning that nobody's engaging it in work, but it happens to be carrying something on its back. But the owner doesn't need that. He doesn't care about the bird sitting on its back. He doesn't want that. On the other hand, ala alei zachar, if the male mounts the animal, that's what the owner wants. He wants his animals to reproduce. And by reproducing, that is a benefit to him. So even though it doesn't happen with his guidance necessarily, it happens by itself, then it's considered to be problematic because it's something that is nechale, something that he wants. And similarly, on the previous amud, the same thing will be true here. Where he puts it in a team and it goes in and threshes, over there he didn't care about the threshing. He didn't want it to thresh. Therefore, even though it happened by itself, he's not going to be considered as if it worked. On the other hand, where he intends for it to thresh and it goes in and does it by itself, he doesn't direct it, but it happens to do it, then it will be problematic. So that's the basic idea here, that there is such a concept of passive work being done, but it has to have the acquiescence or the approval of the owner. Tosfot asks a beautiful question over here, a fundamental question. We're talking about a para aduma. Para aduma is expensive. It's worth a ton of money. If this animal, if this zachar comes here and mounts the animal, it's now disqualified from being a para aduma. He's going to lose everything. So which owner would ever have in mind that he wants the animal to mount this animal and he's going to lose everything. He's going to lose his para aduma. Who would ever have that in mind? So Tosafot says something here that's very important. He says, V'yish lamar, dim nemar k'shera hava nechale, ulekach en l'hakshira. Because without the halachic restriction over here, if we looked at this in the abstract and we said, does the owner want this male to mount the female? The answer would be yes in the abstract. The only reason he doesn't want it to mount the female over here is because of the halachic requirement that a para aduma not do work. And so it's the halacha that's stopping him, not his real will. His real will or his real desire is for the animal to reproduce and for the male to mount the female. And therefore, it's going to be considered as if he wants it, even though there's a huge mitigating factor here, which is the loss of the para aduma. This plays very heavily. There is an unbelievable tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva with regards to refrigerators on Shabbat. What happens when you leave on the light inside the refrigerator? You left it on for Shabbat by accident. Now you want to open up the refrigerator. So what is that considered? It's called a pasuk reshe. It's pasuk reshe because when you open the door, automatically the light's going on. But it's a pasuk reshe to lo nechle. You don't want the light to come on because if the light comes on, you can't open it on Shabbat. So there were those that wanted to claim that, according to the Aruch, who says pasuk reshe to lo nechle is mutar, that should be mutar. And even according to the other Rishonim who say it's asur, it's only asur midrabanan. So there should be dispensations from it. Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes in the Gemara here as well as in the Gemara in Baba Metzia as well. And Tosafot says the same thing over there. But this, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach quotes this Tosafot and he says, tell me the truth. If it wasn't Shabbat and you opened up the refrigerator, wouldn't you want the light to go on? The answer is yes. The only reason you don't want the light on to go on is because of the halachic iser of Shabbat. That's not considered to be lo nechale. Just like Tosafot says over here, that the fact that it's going to ruin the Parah Adumah is not considered to be lo nechale over here. So too, the fact that the light coming on in Shabbat is only a problem because it's Shabbat. During a weekday, you'd love the light to come on. You could see in the refrigerator. It's much better. So that fact is not considered to be lo nechale, and it becomes a pasuk reshe de nechale. And that's why if the light's left on in the refrigerator on Shabbat, you can't open it up. And according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that would be an isur d'oraita, because it's a pasuk reshe de nechale, because that's something that he wants to happen, and it's not a pasuk reshe de lo nechale. It's an important derivative of this Tosafot over here. Tosafot does ask another question, which is that we find in the Mishnayot in Parah about a Parah Adumah that's pregnant. How could you ever have a Parah Adumah that's pregnant if we say over here, as soon as it's mounted by a male, that it's problematic? So there are two possibilities. He gives two answers over here. It's only if the mounting happened with the owner pushing that to happen. That's one possibility. In the cases in the Mishnayot in Parah are cases where the owner is not involved in the reproduction. Or the other possibility, which is interesting, similar to Hechsher Mashkim, the owner has to give his acquiescence or approval why the action is in place. Meaning that while the male is mounting the female, he has to say, oh, that's great, you know, I want them to reproduce. But if the act happens, and only after the fact he knows about it, his approval after the fact may not be meaningful. It has to be while that avodah is happening that he has to give approval. And that's how we'll get this possibility of Parah Adumah being pregnant and not being disqualified for avodah. Okay, so now the Gemara continues and brings another try to prove to this case of Hana Baal Korcho. Tashma, Aveda. You have something that was lost. The person picked up an Aveda, so now he's responsible to take care of it. Lo yishtachena lo agabi mita v'lo agabi magod l'tzorcho. He may not spread it out for his own benefit on a bed or on a hook, on a peg that's in the wall or a clothing frame. If he wants it for his own benefit, he certainly can't do it because it's not his. On the other hand, but if it's for the benefit of the clothing, to shake it out, to air it out, to get it dusted off, then he is permitted to do it. So if, basic principle here, if it's for the benefit of the Aveda itself, the lost item itself, of course he can do it. If it's his own personal benefit, then he can't do it because it's not his to do that with. And Nizdamlu Orchim, all of a sudden he has guests that come over. Lo yishtachana, he cannot spread it out. Lo agabi mita v'lo agabi magot. He can't put it out, whether it's on the bed or whether it's on the peg. Ben letzorcha, whether it's for the benefit of the aveda itself. Ben letzorcho, whether for his benefit. So now, in terms of his benefit, we know what the problem is, because it's not his. But in a case where it's a benefit for the item itself, why don't we say that that's fine? It's the benefit of the item, he's allowed to do it. Just because he has guests over, why does that disqualify him? So here it's a case where Lo Afshar, because he needs to take care of this Aveda, so he's putting it out. But it's a case where he's Mitkavein, that when he puts it out, even though it's for the benefit of the Aveda itself, he still wants the other people to see it and think it's his. And since he wants them to see it and think it's his, then it's a case of Mitkavein. So this is a case of Delo Afshar Umitkavein, and we're saying Asur again. So again, either this could be authored by Rabbi Shimon, or, if Abai is going to explain this within the position of Rabbi Yehuda, we have to explain over here why it's asur, even though it's a case of lo afshar and mitkavein. So he says, Shani Hotam, says the case is different over here, dikali lo, because it's a case where he is actively destroying it. He's actively burning it up. What do you mean he's actively burning it up? One of two possibilities, imishum ena bisha, because he's exposing it to the ayin hara, he's spreading it out when guests come over, and they're going to be jealous, or they're going to be like, wow, about this, and it's going to cause an ayin hara to come to this object. Oh, imishum ganve, possibility that some of his guests are thieves. And by placing it out in front of them, now he's opening it up to the possibility that it'll be taken or stolen by them. So this is an interesting Gemara, but the Gemara says when you expose your friend's money or objects to this possibility of being stolen or being exposed to the Ayin Hara, it's the equivalent of actively destroying it. And so because of that, that's why you're held culpable over here, or that's why you're not allowed to do it. Not because it's a classic case of Lo Efshar and Mitkavein. This is a case where it's an exposure or as if you're actively destroying it, and that's why we won't allow it in this case. All right, next proof. Tashma, Mochrek Sut. People who are selling clothing, but they're selling clothing that is kilayim. So first of all, it's mutar to sell clothing that's kilayim. There's no problem. There's no Easter against trafficking in kilayim. You can't sell it to a Jew, but you can sell it to non-Jews. The only time there's a restriction in a Jew selling kilayim is when it's lost inside the bag, when it's not known or it's not obvious that it's kilayim. In that case, you may not sell it to the Nachri, because the Nachri may then go and sell it to another Jew, and the Jew will think it's fine because it came from the first Jew. So in cases where the kilayim is obvious and there's no questions about the fact that he's selling kilayim, it's mutar to traffic in it. So these people are selling ksut kilayim. Mochrim kedarkam. They can sell it the normal way. What does it mean, the normal way? Is that they usually show their wares. They put the clothing on their back. They carry it around. So they are wearing the kilayim in order to show it to the customers. Ubavaj loit kaven b'chama b'pnei chama. As long as he doesn't have intention when it's hot outside that this should protect him from the sun, bikshamim, or if it's raining out or it's cold out, bikshamim, that it shouldn't protect him from the cold or the rain. So as long as he's not intending to use it as a piece of clothing simply to show it to the customers, then it's fine. Vatsnuim, those who are makpid al ha mitzvot, meaning that they shy away from things that are even on the borderline of Yisur, mashilin achorim b'makel, they use a stick to hold it up over their back so it never literally rests on them. They basically put it on an equivalent of a mannequin, but they basically hold it up with a stick over their back so it never really rests on their shoulders, but it looks like they're wearing it. Now, v'ha-ha-cha, this is a case, de'efshar le'maved k'tznuim. The people in the reisha who are not the tznuim, they have a choice about what to do. They can either do it the normal way, k'darkan, or they can do it like the tznuim and put it up on a makel. V'chilo mekavein. And over here it says, if he's not mekavein, mutar. Shari, it's totally mutar. So here's a case of efshar velo mitkavein. And we say here that it's mutar. So the Gemara says, tuyufta, the man detani lishna kama, derova tuyufta. Then according to the lishna kama, this is problematic, because in the lishna kama, we said if it's efshar and lo mitkavein, there Rabbi Yehuda says it's asur. But Rabbi Shimon said it was mutar according to Abaye, and asur according to Rova. So according to Abaye, this works fine. Who's the author of this Mishnah? Rabbi Shimon. Whereas according to Rava, who's the author of the Mishnah? There's nobody left to be the author of the Mishnah, because both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon thinks it's problematic when it's Efshar. And so therefore this dismisses or undermines the Lishna Kama and says to us that the Lishna Batra is the proper way to approach here. And so the Lishna Batra, again, will say that in cases of Efshar and Mitkavein, so in a case of Efshar Mitkavein, everybody agrees it's Asur. In a case of lo efshar and lo mitkavein, everybody agrees it's mutar. In the case of efshar and lo mitkavein, and lo efshar and mikavein, there we have the machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In the case of efshar lo mitkavein, we have a classic machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says asur because it's davar sheinu mitkavein is asur. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar because davar sheinu mitkavein is mutar. In the case of lo efshar and mitkavein, Rabbi Shimon's going to say it's asur because kavanah matters. And if you're mitkavein for it, it matters. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we have the machloki between Abaye and Rava. Abaye will say it's mutar because Rabbi Yehuda says mitkavein doesn't matter. It's a case of lo efshar, and therefore it's fine. And Rava says no. Rabbi Yehuda still thinks mitkavein is problematic. He just says when it's the chumra, then lo mitkavein doesn't help you. And that'll be the way that we'll set up the machloki here between Abaye and Rava. It'll be within the position of Rabbi Yehuda in lo efshar and mitkavein. Right, now the Gemara continues and says about the chametz, about the Isra'ana, lo yasikba at the tanur, that you're not allowed to fire up the oven with this. Tanur banan, tanur shisiko beklipe orla o bekashim shel kilei akerem. So a tanur that was fired up with klipe orla, these are the skins or the shells of orla. As Rashi points out over here, in the orla, we're talking about certain fruits, whether it's a pomegranate or other fruits where they have a soft enough shell that you could burn it. Because by Orla, there's a din, only the pri is asur. It has to be the fruit itself that's asur. Whereas by the Kilei Akerem, there's no din of fruit. The word pri is never mentioned there. And therefore, even kashim, even anything that's a product of the Kilei HaKerem is problematic. So that's why the Mishnah terms them differently. One is Klipei Orla, and the other one is Hashim Shel Kilei HaKerem. Both of them are Itzurei Hana'ah, Chadash. If this is a brand new oven, and this is the first time you're firing it, meaning basically you're putting it in the kiln and it's hardening here, Yutatz, you must break it. Yashan, if it's an older oven and you heated it up with this, Yutzan, you cool it back down, and then you can now refire it with something that is Mutar. So the difference being, obviously, that if it's Chadash, it's brand new, and you fire it with the Isur, that is what's creating the Gemar Kli, and that will be permanently a part of anything you do with this Tanur. This Isur will be there because it's what caused the oven to be hardened. On the other hand, by Yashan, if the oven's already hardened, then when you're heating it up each time, the only benefit you're getting is the heat that's created in each instance. So that heat that's created, all you have to do is remove the heat, and now you can move on. So Yutzan, you cool it off. Afabo et apat, if you cooked a loaf of bread inside of this oven with the Isurei Hana. Rabbi Omer Pat Asura. Rabbi says the pat is problematic. Hachamim Omerim Pat Muteret. That the bread is fine. Bishlo Gabi Gichalim Divi Akol Mutar. Everybody agrees if you bake it on top of the coals that it's Mutar because the Isur is no longer extant. It's now in a coal form. It's already been destroyed. And any heat that's coming in the coals is coming from Heter and no longer coming from Isur. So I'm just going to lay out the basic understanding of this Mishnah. First of all, Rabbi believes that the pot is asura because what we call shvach itzim bapat. You are finding the benefit of the wood that is being burnt here is now inside the bread. You burnt isurei hana'ah, and now the bread has a portion of that isur inside of it, and that's what caused the problem. On the other hand, the chamim say it's fine because there's no such thing as shvach itzim bapat. Once they burn the wood no longer exists. Or the isurei hana'ah over here, once they are burnt, they are no longer extant, and whatever is in the bread is not the Isur itself. It's the heat or the product of that, and it's not a problem. Now, as far as the Reisha, part of the Chadash, Yutatz, Yashan, Yutzan, that has to do with a principle that the Gemara is going to introduce now, which is called Zeh V'Zeh Goreim. When you have two items that cause something to happen. Now, when you have this new oven over here, if you fire it up in the kiln with this Isurei Hana'ah, and it's completed with the Isurei Hana'ah, whenever you use this oven from now on, one of the Gormim, one of the items that causes the oven to function is that it was fact that it was finished be isur. On the other hand, every time you fire it up, you're going to fire it up with heter as well. Because now if you put regular wood into the oven, the heat that's created inside of this oven is caused by two things. One is the oven itself being solid, and number two is the new wood that's put in there. So that's what we call ze b'ze goreim. You have a goreim of isur, which is the fact that the oven was finished be isur. And you have a goreim of heter, which is that there's new wood in there that is of heter. So now, Zeh V'Zeh Goreim, according to this Tanakam over here, is Asur. It's problematic, and therefore you have to break the oven. Yashan, with the older oven, again, there's only one Goreim here. Every time you heat the oven, the Goreim is what you heated the oven with. So as soon as you cool it off, all you have to do is bring in the new wood and use it again. The problem now is we have another Braita, V'atanya. Ben Chadash, Ben Yashan Yutzan. Whether it's a new oven or an old oven, you let it cool down. So how do we reconcile between these two Braitot? Lokasha, Harabi, Harabonon. We'll say that the latter Braita is authored by the Rabbonon, and the first Braita is authored by Rabbi. So the Gemara says, Imur Dishmaitle the Rabbi Mishum Dishvach Itzim Bapat. Okay, we understand by Rabbi that we understand this idea that because when you directly cook the bread with the Isurei Hana'ah, then we believe that a portion of the Isurei Hana'ah is now found inside the bread, and that is problematic. That's what makes it Asur. Zev Zeh Goreim Mishmaitle. But we never heard from Rabbi this idea of Zeh V'Zeh Goreim. By the oven, you're not going to eat the oven. So therefore, even if it was finished be isur, the fact that you're not going to consume the oven means that even if there's shvach etzim in the oven, it doesn't matter. Because the next time you heat it up to cook the bread, there's going to be heter there. And that becomes a case of Zeh V'Zeh Goreim. We know from Rabbi's position within the Braito that he thinks that there is shvach etzim bapat, but that doesn't tell us anything about his position about Zeh V'Zeh Goreim. And therefore, how are you so certain that Rabbi is the author of that position that says Chadash Yutatz and Yashan Yutzan? According to the Chachamim, we know. The Chachamim believe that nothing of Isur is coming about from burning of the Isur Hana'ah. So we can understand why they're the authors of the second Braita, which is that you just always have to let it cool off. You always let it cool off because Zeh V'Zeh Goreim is Mutar. So in the case of a new one, Zeh V'Zeh Goreim is Mutar, Bidiyavit, not the Chadchila. We're not going to tell you to do that Chadchila, but if you did finish it off with the Isur, then when you bring in the heter, it's no problem. On the other hand, the second case of, again, Yutzan by Yashan, which I mentioned before, is even if you think Zeh V'Zeh Goreim is mutar, we'd rather let you cool it off and then heat it up with something that's heter. then you could have just cooked with this oven, no problem at all. Now, truthfully, if you say Zevzer Gorem is Mutar, could have just cooked with it, because each time you heat it up, the oven was finished originally with Heter, and now you're heating it up with Heter. It would be Zevzer Gorem, and it would be Mutar. But nevertheless, we say let it cool off, because there's no loss by letting it cool off. The only thing you lose is the heat created by the Yisur Hana, and we don't have any problem with that. Having you lose that, we have no problem, and therefore we're going to tell you to let it cool off. Why heat it up with the Yisur and let you use the Yisur? Let it cool off, and then we'll force you to use that which is Heter. Gemara says, okay, Ela lo kasha. No, we'll have to ascribe the authorship of these two brayto to someone else. Ha Rebbe Eliezer, ha Rabbanon. Again, the second brayto is the Rabbanon, as we explained. The first brayto will be the position of Rabbi Eliezer, who holds Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. So the Gemara wants to know, hey, Rabbi Eliezer, which Rabbi Eliezer, which position of Rabbi Eliezer says that Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur? Ilema Rabbi Eliezer de Seor. If you think it's Rabbi Eliezer from this Mishnah in Orla, which is done, Seor shel Chulin. Vishel Truma. If you have Seor, you have a leavening agent. One part of it is Chulin, and one part of it is Truma. Shenaflu l'tochisa, and they fall into bread, and they leaven the bread. Vein bezek delachmit, vein bezek delachmit. Each one individually does not have enough to cause the bread to rise. So each leavening agent by itself is not sufficient. Together they are sufficient. Vinit starfu. If they get together, vichimtzu, and they cause it to rise, Rebbe Lezer omer, achar acharon aniba. I go after the last one that fell in. If Isur was the last one, it's Asur. If Heter was the last one, then it's Mutar. Chmim ben shenafal Isur l'chadchila or bitchila. Ben shenafal Isur b'sof l'olam einu Asur ad shehebo kedei l'hachmit. Chmim believe that until there's enough of a leavening agent within the Isur, or here within the Truma, to make it that way, we don't worry about it. Because if it's mitzareif with something else, it's as if it doesn't exist. It's as if it didn't have sufficient ability to do it by itself. So it's clear the Chachamim believe Zeh Goreim, Zeh Goreim. You have two Goreim over here that it's Mutar. Because here you have half the Goreim being Mutar, half the Goreim being Asur. The Chachamim say that's not problematic. The question is, what is the position of Rabbi Eliezer? V'amar Abai. Abai explains the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Lo shanu elo shekada misileket ha'isur. That's only if he pulled out the Isur. Meaning, if he takes the Isur out and then the Heter falls in, then Rabbi Eliezer says it's fine. Aval lo kada misileket ha'isur. On the other hand, if he left the Isur in and then the Heter falls in and finishes it off, Asur. Alma, Zev Zeh Goreim Asur. You see from Eliezer's position that Zev Zeh Goreim is problematic. Because the way Abai is explaining Rabbi Eliezer, the only time he thinks it's Mutar is if you took the Isur out, and then afterwards the Heter came in and finished it off by itself. Since it finished it off by itself, it's Mutar. But if they're there together, it would be problematic. Gemara says, Umimai, the time of the Rabbi Eliezer, Ke'abai. Who says Abai is right over here? Who says that Abai's position is Mukrach within Rabbi Eliezer? Dilma, time of the Rabbi Eliezer, Mishom, the Achar Charon Aniba. Maybe the real answer or the real position Rabbi Eliezer has to do with whichever comes last dictates. So, lo shna kadam v'sileket d'isur, lo shna lo kadam v'sileket d'isur. It doesn't matter if he took it out or he didn't take it out. Whatever falls last, whatever causes the leavening of the bread, that is what dictates over here. Avabat achat. Had they fallen together, hakanami d'shori, then it would be mutar. So the only reason that it is asur over here is because we go after the last item. But when they fall together and it's Zev Zeh Goreim, then we would say it's Mutar. So this cannot be the source. Ella, Rabbi Eliezer de Atzei Asherah. Must be Rabbi Eliezer of Atzei Asherah. Titznan, we have a Mishnah. Natale mena itzim asurim behana'a. If he takes wood or branches from the Asherah, then it's Asur behana'a. Hesek behem et atanur. If he fires up the oven with them, chadash yutatz, yeshan yutzan. If it's a new oven, then he's got to break it. Yashan, if it's an older oven, then he just lets it cool off. Afa bot apat asurim behana'a. If he cooks the pot inside of it, then it's asur behana'a. Nit arva be'acherot. If he then gets mixed up with other items. Now, we have an argamara v'acherot be'acherot, and then they with others, meaning that it gets mixed up, and then again gets mixed up with other items. The Rabbeinu Tam takes it out and says the Mishnah does not have that girsa in it. The Mishnah does not contain acherot be'acherot. But nevertheless, kulana serim ba'ana'a, they're always a problem of isur hana'a. Rabbi Eliezer omer, yolich hana liyam ha'melach, that if they get mixed together, all you have to do is you redeem the value of the isur atzariah over here, and then you take that money and throw it in yam ha'melach. Amrulo, Chamim said back to him, ain't podim la'avodah zarah. You can't redeem avodah zarah. There's no such thing as redemption of avodah zarah, of transference of the problem of avodah zarah onto money. It's not like hektesh, where you can transfer the hektesh onto the money. Over here, you can't transfer avodah zarah onto money. This Rabbi Eliezer seems to say that Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. The truth is, the Tanakhama for sure says Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. The Tanakhama is very clear about his position. He says that Chadash Yutatz, Yashan Yutzan. So he's clear that Zeb Zegorim is Asur. So the Tanakhama of Rabbi Lezer certainly holds Zeb Zegorim is Asur. But Rabbi Lezer himself also says the same thing, because he says the only time it's Mutar is if you redeem the Avodah Zarah and you take the Isur Hana'ah out of there. But if you don't take the Isur Hana'ah out of there, Rabbi Lezer agrees to the position of the Tanakhama. So truthfully, Rashi mentions this, that we could have said that the author of that braita before is the Tanakhama of Rabbi Lezer. We just don't know who the Tanakhama is. So we're just calling it Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer means him and his party over here, meaning him and the Tanakhama as well. Everybody in this Mishnah from Avodah Zarah agrees that Zeb Zigurim is Asur. And that's clear. This Mishnah looks exactly like the first braita that we brought before. So Rabbi Lezer will be the author of the first braita before, or the Tanakhama Rabbi Lezer will be that author. And the Rabbanan will be the authors of this second braita. Gemara says, how can you prove that from here about Rabbi Lezer? Imor dishmaitle the Rabbi Lezer b'avodah zarah d'chamir yitzurah. This opinion of Rabbi Lezer might be unique to Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, which has a high standard or high threshold of Isur, therefore, it also has this problem, Zeb Zegorim is Asur. B'shar Yisurim shvetura mishmaitle. How do you know you can extrapolate that position to any other Isur? Avodah Zarah might be unique in its stringency, and therefore you cannot extrapolate from it. So, Ela Imkain, so the Gemara says two answers. One is, if you think that's the case, Aman Tarmiei, who are we going to place this Braita? We can't find an author to this Braita except Rabbi Eliezer. So, if we're not going to accept that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not unique to Avodah Zarah, but rather applies to all Sirim Shabbat Torah, we have no author for our Braita. And therefore, it's most likely that it is Rabbi Eliezer. That's one. Number two is Vod, Hatanya Behedja. We have a Braita that explicitly says that Rabbi Lezer extends this position to other Isurim, which is V'chein Hayah Rabbi Lezer Oser B'chol Isurim Shabbat Torah. Similar to Atzei Asherah, Rabbi Lezer extrapolates, or his opinion applies to all Isurim Shabbat Torah. So it's clear here that Rabbi Lezer believes Zev Zegorim is Asur, and he will be the author of that first Braita. Now, Amar Abaye. Abaye comes back and says, okay, let's look at Rabbi's position over here. What's Rabbi's position? Imtim Salomar Zev Zegorim Asur. If Rabbi believes Zeb Zegorim is Asur, then Rabbi Hainu Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi and Rabbi Eliezer will be undifferentiated in their positions, which is that they both think Zeb Zegorim is Asur, and that's why he could also have been the author of that previous Braita. Vim Tim Salomar, if you want to suggest Zeb Zegorim Mutar, that Rabbi believes Zeb Zegorim is Mutar, like the Gemara suggested before, how do you know that Rabbi is the author of Braita? Maybe he just has a problem with Shvach Eitzim. But Zeb Zegorim, he might not agree, and he might say it's Mutar. That's why he says it's a surah over there. Hani ki'arot v'kosot utzlochiyot. These plates or bowls, kosot, goblets or cups, utzlochiyot or flasks or bottles. Asirei, even Rabbi would agree that they're problematic. Kiplige, when Rabbi disagrees, is betanur v'kteira. That's when he's talking about an oven or a cooking pot. The difference being is whether you have a zev zegorim instance over here. In the case of Kiarot, Kosot, and Slochiot, they're heated once. They're heated once to finish them. That's in the kiln. When they're heated once, they're finished. After that, their utility is even without heating. So if you go to take a drink from the cup, there's only one Gorim over here. The only Gorim is the item that caused it to be finished, which was Isur. And therefore, it's going to be problematic, according to Rabbi, because we do believe that when you fire something up with the Isurei Hana, that it does have impact on that item. And since there's an impact on the item over here, therefore, these items are going to be Asurim. There's no case of Zeb Zegorim over here. It's one Gorim, and that Gorim is Isur. Whereas, by Tanur and Ktera, they're only used in instances of heating them up. A Tanur is not functional until you heat it up. A Ktera, a pot that you put on the oven, or you put on the stovetop, needs to be heated up. So over those cases, there will always be a Zeb Zegorim, because one Gorim will be the finishing of the item that was done by Isur Anah. The other Gorim will be the reheating of them in the next instance, and that will be Heter. So then, Rebbe will believe over there that it's Mutar. Rebbe Lezer will believe that it is Asur. Lamanda Amar Zev Zegorim Asur Asur. According to the one who says Zev Zegorim Asur, will say that Tanur and Kedera are problematic. Lamanda Amar Zev Zegorim Mutar, Shori, they will be Mutarim. Ika Damre, there's some that say, Afil Lamanda Amar Zev Zegorim Mutar, Kedera Asura. Kedera falls into the same category as Kiarot, Kosot, and Slochiot. Taha Kabla Bishula, Mikamin Iten Etzim Dehetera. Because when you place something in the pot, you place it in there before you heat it up. So if you're going to cook the soup on the stovetop, you put the soup in the pot, and then you heat it up. So the pot has function even without the other goreim. I mean, the tanur only has one function. You don't put bread in there unless the oven is hot. The oven's not hot, you don't put bread in there because there's no value in that. It's not going to help you whatsoever. And other than by a pot, the pot has value even without being heated up, because you put the item to cook in it prior to heating up the pot. And therefore, he would think that it's in the same category as Kearot, Kosod, and Tzolchiot, which is only one goreim. All right, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Yehuda Meshmol, Tanur Shisiko Beklipe Orla. So now we have another Braita, a Braita that is now in the name of Shmuel. And in Shmuel's Braita, Tanur Shisiko Beklipe Orla Bekashin Shokilei Akerim, similar to the first Braita we saw before, Chadash Yutatz, Yashan Yutzan. So this is similar opinions that we saw before in that first Braita. Afa Boat Apat, he bakes the bread in it, Rabbi Omer Apat Muteret, Mimarim Apat Asura. Rabbi says the pot is fine, the Chamim say it's problematic, Vaha Tanya Ipcha. This is the exact opposite of the first Braita that we brought down. In the first Braita that we brought down, we said Rabbi said it was Asura, the Chamim said it's Muteret. So why do we have it backwards over here? So one answer of the Gemara is, Shmuel Ipcha Tani. That's the Mesorah that Shmuel had. Shmuel had the Braita brought down with the opposite of the previous Braita that we brought down, the first Braita that we brought down in the Sugya. V'baitema, some say, Ba'alma Kasava Shmuel, that actually Shmuel intentionally flipped their opinions, and even though he had the Girsa, or his Braita was the same as the Braita we brought before. And that is because Shmuel normally thinks Halacha Kirabi Mechaveiro. The principle in Halachic Psak is that when you have Rabbi Cholek on one other individual, the Halacha is like Rabbi. Velo Mechaveirav. But when he argues on a plural, when he argues on a multitude, then he's not, Halacha is not like him. So Rabbi will win in a one-on-one situation, but when the Rabbim argue on Rabbi, he will not win. Ubaha, in this halacha, afilu mechaveirav, the halacha is like Rabbi, even against the Rabbim. So if you go back and look at the Braita that we first brought down, there Rabbi said apat asura, Chachamim said it's muteret. Now Shmuel believes in this case, the halacha is like Rabbi, despite the fact that the Chachamim argue on him. So he wants halacha to be apat asura. So what does he do? V'savar atnei ipcha, I'll flip their positions, ki ha'echem denikim rabbanan lisura. If I flip their positions, then the Rabbim will be of the position apat asura, and I'll basically get what I want. I get the halacha to be Rabbi by making it the Rabbim now. So he flipped the positions in order to get the halacha the way he wanted without having to argue with everybody or have to prove to everybody that here the halacha is like Rabbi Mechaveirav. So he did it intentionally to cause the halacha to be paskin in that manner. Right, probably not the best thing to do, but we see it in other places. We've seen this not the first place in Shas that we've seen that. We see sometimes that Amoraim quotes something in the name of somebody even though they never said it in order to give it a strength or tokef. That when they want to get the halacha paskin, sometimes over here they have a problem because they don't want to confuse people. In this instance, if he says halacha is like Rabbi, people might come to the conclusion that halacha karabi mechaveirav, which he doesn't want to do. He wants it only to be in this case. So he found it easier to flip the braita in order to get the halacha that way without having to cause a major uproar or cascade out of this, which will be problematic, which is we don't want people to think that halacha is like Rabbi mechaveirav. So he felt this was the easiest solution in order to get the halacha that way without causing waves in paskening halacha. Right, so now the next piece of the Gemara says, in the next line in the Braita says, Bishla gabi gichalim, divrei hakol apat muteret. If he bakes it on top of the coals, then everybody says it's mutar. Even Rabbi agrees once you bake it on top of the coals that it's fine. The difference being that if he cooks it when there's a flame there, we're going to see this in 1 second, then there's still shvachitzim bapat. Then the Isur is still be'ein, it's still extant, and it's causing the value to come into the bread itself. On the other hand, once it's a coal, it's gone. It's been destroyed. There's something else here now. You have a coal. A coal is a destroyed piece of hana'ah. It's no longer an Isur hana'ah. There's no longer an Isur hana'ah. If you're heating it up with the coals, then you don't have a problem with shvachitzim, and even Rabbi will agree that it's muteret. So now we have Amar Rav Yehuda Meshmol, Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav Yochanan. We have two memrot. One is from Yehuda Meshmol, and one's from Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav Yochanan. This is only true when you're talking about coals that are still hot. They are simmering down. These are coals in their decline. If these are glowing coals, these are coals that have a flame on them, asurim, they remain asur, because those coals still have part of the Isur Hana'ah extant in them. And one of them says, if you reach the point where they're coals, even if the coals are glowing and they still have a flame on them, it's mutar. So Bishlam Alaman Damar Lo Chashot Asurim, according to one who says that the glowing coals or the coals with the flame on them are asurim, that we understand Mishum Diyesh Shvachitzim Bapat. Alaman Damar Afilu Lo Chashot Mutarot, if he says that even when the coals have a flame on them, it's mutar, Pat Asar Diyesh Shvachitzim Pat, the Rabbi Hecha Mishkachale. Where is there a case where the pot's going to be problematic? Where are you going to have Shvachitzim Bapat? How do you cook bread? You have the coals in there, you heat up the oven, and then the bread bakes inside of it. So now, where's the case when it's going to be problematic? So, Rapapa Kashavuka Kenegdo. When it's still there, when it's first burning out, when it's not a coal, but it's when the wood is there and you're actually burning the item. So when the flame is alive and the flame is burning the Isurei Hana, according to Rabbi, that'll be a problem with Shvachitzim Bapat. But once you hit the point of a coal, then it's not problematic. Now, if you establish that that's the position of Rabbi, now, what's the position of the Rabbanim? Michlal, the Rabbanim de Pliga Alei, Shoru Afilu Shagavuka Genegdo. That means that the Chamim believe that even when there's a fire, you have the Eitzim there, and you're burning them, that's not called Shvachitzim Bapat. Because the Chamim believe that as you burn it, it's consumed. And if it's consumed, it doesn't exist anymore. So the consumption, it's acting as a fuel. And so there, once the fuel is gone, meaning the flame is made and the fuel is gone, there's never Isur Hana over here. Then when is Eitzim, or when you have Isurei Hana that are Eitzim, whenever is it problematic? It's never going to be problematic. No matter how you burn it or you use it to heat up something, it's not problematic. When you're talking about a footstool, or you're talking about a kisei, meaning that the only time you can have a problem with these Isurei Hana is when they're actually extant. When you make them into a footstool, or you make them into a chair, where the Eitzim are physically there, that's going to be a problem with Isurei Hana. But if you burn them, there isn't going to be a problem of Isurei Hana. Rami Bar Chama asked this of Rav Chisda. Tanu shisiku batzei hektesh. Instead of being atzei, whether we had before Asherah, or had we had before Orla, or Kilei Akerem, which always Isurim Hana'a, over here was done with hektesh. Va'afa bo pat, and then he bakes a loaf of bread in it. The Rabbanan deshoru b'kamaito mai. The Rabbanan who say in these other cases that it's mutar because in all these cases they don't believe that there's shevach etzim bapat. So since they don't believe that there's shevach etzim bapat, therefore they think that it's not problematic. What is their position when it comes to hekdesh? So Amalei apat asura. He says that here the pat is problematic. So it says, Ma ben zula orla? Why is this different than all the other cases before? The Chachamim said it's fine. Why all of a sudden over here do they say it's problematic? Amarova achiashta. How can you compare the cases? Orla b'teila b'mataim. Hektesh afilu b'elef lo batil. Orla has a case of being batel, meaning that there's a kula by Orla and by other Isurei Hana, which is that other Isurei Hana have a din of bitul. Whereas Hekdesh, afilu b'elef lo batil, by Hektesh, we don't have that case. So, Amarava, ikash le ha'akasha. If you want to ask a question, this is the question. Halo ma'al ha'mesik. The one who lit the fire here and burned the item was Mo'el. Mo'el is somebody who uses Hekdesh, misappropriates Hekdesh, and uses it for his own benefit. When he uses his own benefit, he's chayav mi'ila, which means that he has to bring a korbana sham mi'ilot. He has to repay to Hekdesh the money plus a fifth. So there is a specific prescription for someone who does this, misappropriates Hekdesh. But we also know that once you do mi'ilah, it causes the item to become chulin. And therefore there's a position or principle, ein mo'el achar mo'el. Two people can't be mo'el in an item, because the item loses its sense of Hekdesh once somebody misappropriates it. The only exception to that are things that have kedushat aguf, like lisharet and korbanot that have kedushat aguf. There you can have multiple people mo'el, because even when you're mo'el, it doesn't take away the kedushah. But anything that has kedushat damim in it, for sure, once one is mo'el, it should disappear. So over here, the Eitzim, once he burns them, they're no longer problematic. Because as soon as he starts to burn them, he's misappropriated them. And they should be chulin now, and it shouldn't be a problem with baking the bread. And anytime someone is mo'el, then they go out to chulin. So Amar Papa, I'll tell you what the answer is. Here we're dealing with wood that he was makdish in order to buy a korban shlamim with it. He says, I'm going to be makdish this wood, I'm going to sell it, and use the monies to purchase a shlamim with it. And this is according to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Damar hekdesh bishogeg mitchalel b'mezid eno mitchalel. Hekdesh, if it's misappropriated accidentally or unintentionally, then it loses its kedusha. On the other hand, if it's done b'mezid, if it's done intentionally, Einu mitchalel, it's not mitchalel, does not lose its kedusha. B'mezid my time alo, why when you do it intentionally does it not lose it? Kevin delav bar me'iluhu, because then there's no isser me'ilah, or there's no din of me'ilah, no nafik l'chulin, therefore it doesn't go out to chulin. Shlamim nami, shlamim the same thing, because they're kodshim kalim. Kevin delav bar me'ilah ninhu, since they don't have a din of me'ilah, lo nafik l'chulin, they don't go out to be chulin. So here we can come up a case where even though he's quote-unquote mo'el, he's using hekdesh, he's misappropriating hekdesh, it's hekdesh that's not going to make a difference. Now, there are two possible answers you could give over here. Either it's atzei shlamim, which is that it's something that's kodshim kalim, that don't have a din of mi'ilah, and that's why over here there's no mi'ilah, therefore they don't go out to chulin, they remain hekdesh. Or the other possibility is, even if it's kodshim kalim, he does it b'mezid. I mean, that's the other answer the Gemara could again, he just did it intentionally. If he does it intentionally, it's also problematic, because the korban mi'ilah and the repayment of mi'ilah only is for someone who does it b'shogeg, who does it accidentally or unintentionally. Someone does it intentionally, then there's no din of mi'ilah. He doesn't bring an asham, he does not repay hekdesh in the same way, and therefore there's no chilul. There's no profaning of the object remains hekdesh. So either case, whether the Eitzim were utilized b'mezid, or these were itzim of shlamim that they were kodshei kolim. In either case, here we have a case where the mi'ilah does not take effect, and if mi'ilah doesn't take effect, they also don't become profane, they don't go to chulin. Chol heicha d'mal ha'mesik nafke l'chulin. Is it really true? Anytime you have a case of mi'ilah, that automatically whatever he did mi'ilah with misappropriated goes out to chulin. Because we have a braita that seems to disagree with that position. V'atanyo, don't we have a braita? Kol nisrafim efran mutar, chutz mi'atzei ashira. Anything that has a requirement to be burnt, meaning that it's Yisrael and none has to be burnt, once it's burnt, Efran mutar, their ashes are mutar. Chutz me'atzei ashira, the exception that rule is the atzei ashira, that even after it's burnt, it's problematic. Ve'efer hekdesh lo'olam asur, and ashes of hekdesh are always problematic. So here you have a case, it seems in the Braita, that even though it was Nisraf, that had the case of Me'ilah, and yet the efer, the ashes afterwards, are still problematic. But you said before, anytime there's mi'ilah, then there is no problem with the item afterwards, because it's yotzei l'chulin. And here we have a braita that seems to disagree with that. Now, as Tosafot points out, the Gemara could have answered over here that we're talking about atzei shlamim like before, and then you wouldn't have a problem, because there's no mi'ilah by atzei shlamim. If there's no mi'ilah, it's not yotzei l'chulin, and that's where the problem of efer is. Seems like the Gemara wants to talk about something broader than that, because it says over here, any type of hektesh, it doesn't specify the hektesh. Gemara could also have answered that this is a case of mezid. Again, by mezid, where there's no itziyah l'chulin, maybe that's the reason over here that it's still problematic in Efer. Gemara seems to indicate, because it says kol and yisrafim, and all of hektesh, seems to want to come up with a more global answer for this question as to why over here, despite the fact that there might have been mi'ilah, that the Efer might still be asur. Now, the reason that the Gemara is separated between Asherah and Hekdesh is both of them seem to be Asur. Their Efer is Asur is because actually a difference. Efer Hekdesh is always Asur. I'd say Asherah is always Asur, except if a non-Jew is the one who's burning it. Because then he's Mevatel the Avodah Zarah. If he's Mevatel the Avodah Zarah, then it's not a problem with the Efer. So there is one exceptional case or a different case there, and that's why the Mishnah separates them out. One possibility is the fire happened by itself. So since it happened by itself, there's no mo'el over here. Since there's no mo'el over here, that's why everything remains hekdesh, because nobody actively was misappropriating hekdesh. It happened by itself. Teleke inish dinimo. Shmai amar botan shetunim giniza. Maybe we're talking about ashes over here. It's not all ashes of hekdesh are problematic. Only these specific ashes are problematic. Detanya. V'samo. Samo eitz lamizbeach is the chumat adeshin. Over there we have samo benachat, if the place down nicely. Samo kulo, you have to put all of it there. Samo shloi vazer, and you place it down so it doesn't get blown away or charged away. And we saw before, but samo is that etonim gniza, that there's nisar anah still with them and they require gniza. So therefore, those are the ashes where the Mishnah is saying that those ashes remain problematic even after they're ashes. But ashes in general will be fine. That's the one answer. Or the answer of Rami Bar Chama is, the reason that these aren't chulin over here is because there was no mi'ilah over here. Why was there no mi'ilah, or there's no mo'el over here? This is a case where the fire happened by itself, and therefore there's nobody mo'el to bring them to chulin. So you could have a case where the ashes are asur, even though somebody is faking them. All right, back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein bir chametz elo b'sreifa. You can only do bir chametz through burning. How do we know that? Tanya, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, ein bir chametz elo b'sreifa. V'adin notein, it's a kal v'chomer. Uman notar she'eno b'bayira o b'yimatzei. Notar that doesn't have this requirement, or it doesn't have the isur of b'yira b'yimatzei, to own sreifa. Yet it still is required to be burnt. Chametz. Yeshno b'bayirei b'yimatzei chametz, which has this much higher level of isur of b'yirei b'yimatzei lo koshken shetun sreifa, certainly should be burnt. Amrulo kodin shata dan kletod achmir v'sof la'kel enu din. You're making a kal v'chomer, but this kal v'chomer will lead to a kula, and therefore your logical argument falls apart. Lo matzei tzim l'shofo, because according to you, if he doesn't find wood to burn it, hu yoshov b'batel, then he won't destroy it. V'atora amrat ashbitu so'or mi'batehem, that you have to eliminate all the so'or in your house. You're allowed to get rid of it in any way you can. But the way that you're establishing the kavachomer, only through bisreifa will it work. That means it'll turn out to be a kula. When he can't do bisreifa, then he won't be able to do tashbitu. So Chazar Rabbi Yehuda v'danu din acher. So Rabbi Yehuda takes a different approach. And in this approach, he does not use a kavachomer, which is a logical argument that can be undermined, but rather uses a gzera shavar, a hekesh, which is something that can defy logic. It's a limud that comes with misora, and since it comes with misora and it can't be done through a logical argument, then even though there might be a problem with it, nevertheless it stands because that's a misora. So it's this: notar asur b'achila, chametz asur b'achila. Notar is restricted from being eaten, and chametz is restricted from being eaten. Ma notar b'sreifa, just like notar is supposed to be burnt, af chametz b'sreifa, so too chametz should be burnt. Samalo nevela tochia. I'll prove you wrong from nevela. Shasura bachila, nevela you're not allowed to eat. Veina tunas refa, you don't have to burn it. Because we know from the pasuk that you can give it to the ger toshav or you can sell it to the nachri. Samalan hefresh. Wait a minute, there's a difference. Notar asur bachila ubehana'a. Notar is not only asur bachila, but it's also asur bahana'a. Mechametz asur bachila bahana'a. But that's not true by nevela. Nevela is only asur bachila, not asur bahana'a. Ma notar noton srefa, av chametz don srefa. Just like notar requires srefa, so too chametz requires srefa. Samalo, shoraniskal yochiach. We can prove that wrong from shoraniskal. Shasur bachila ubehana'a. It's asur in eating and hana, which saw this earlier in the Gemara. Ve'eino ta'un srefa, it's not required to be burnt. Amalan hefresh. Again, we can differentiate. Notar. Asur ba'achila u'bahana vanush karet. It's asur to be eaten, to get benefit from it, and its punishment, if you do eat it, is karet. Hametz asur ba'achila bahana vanush karet. So too, chametz, it has the isur achila, hana, and inush karet, should be b'srefa. Notar b'srefa, chametz b'srefa. As opposed to shor niska, which only has two of those items, which is achila and hana, it doesn't have vanush karet. The fats of a shor niskal will prove you wrong. So number one, they're asur b'achila, both because of tehiliv and because of shor niskal. It's asur b'hana'a because it's a shor niskal. And it's anush karet because of tehiliv. Ve'ein ta'un sreifa, does not require sreifa. So chazer Rabbi Yehuda v'danu din acher. So Rabbi Yehuda says, all right, I'll take a different approach. Notar yeshno b'bal totiru. Notar cannot be left over past a certain time. V'chametz b'bal totiru. And chametz also may not be left past a certain time. Manotar bisrefa, just like notar, since it can't be left past that time, is bisrefa. Af chametz bisrefa. So amrulo, they said back to Rabbi Yehuda, asham talui v'chatata ofa bala safek. These are two korbanot that are brought al hasafek. And asham talui is a korban that's brought for a person who has a safek as to whether he was chayav v'chatat. He had a case where he had chilev and shuman in front of him. Chilev that's asur to eat, shuman that's mutar to eat, and he doesn't know which one he ate. If he ate the chilev, he'd have to bring a chatat. If he ate the shuman, he doesn't have to bring anything. So in the interim, he brings what's called an asham talui to protect him in the interim. That's where you bring an asham talui. Asham talui is for things that otherwise are chiyuv karet b'mezid, chiyuv chatat b'shogeg, in a case we have a safek about it. Again, the Gemara argues about exactly what's safek. I gave the example that everybody agrees that you would bring an asham talui. Chatat of a bal safek. Chatat of is the only korban chatat that can be brought out of safek. For instance, a yoledet. Woman who gives birth is required to bring two korbanot to purify herself from the leida. One is an olah, one is a chatat. So she can bring two birds. One bird that's an olah, one's a chatat. In a case where we are uncertain as to whether she gave birth to something that requires a korban. So in that case, now it's a safek. We can't make her a tahor because we don't know. Maybe she had a leida that makes her tmeah. We can't make her tmeah because maybe she's torah. So what does she do? She brings the birds ala safek. The olah she can bring as a safek. She can say, if I need to bring it, it's a chovah, it's my obligation. If not, it's a nidava. Although on the other hand, a chatat can only be brought for obligation, it cannot be brought voluntarily. So to bring a chatat voluntarily is impossible, except the one exception to that is chatat of. Chatat of can be brought because none of the chatat of ends up on the mizbeach. Only the blood ends up on the mizbeach. The of itself does not end up on the mizbeach. So in a chatat of, you're allowed to bring it al safek. You sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, and then you dispose of the chatat of. Normally, the chatat of is eaten by the kohanim. Over here, by the safek, it will not be eaten by the kohanim, because the way that you kill a bird for kodashim is through melika, break from the back of the neck. Now, if it's kodashim, and she had to bring the korban, then it's kasher, and they could eat it. On the other hand, if it was not the case that she did not need to bring it, then it's chulin. And if you kill a bird through melika and chulin, that is a trefa or is a nevela, and you may not eat it in that case. So therefore, the kohanim don't eat it. When you dispose of an asham talui or a chatat of, how do you dispose of them in a case over here where they cannot be eaten? So there's a machloket there between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. The Gemara says, the Chachamim say, l'dvarecho yochichu. According to your own reasoning, shehein b'bal totiru, you're not allowed to leave them over. And if you do leave them over, sh'anu omrim b'sreifa. We say if you leave them over, they get sreifa like all other notar. Ve'ata omer b'kvura. But you, Rabbi Yehuda, say that when they're left over, they have to get kvura. They don't get sreifa. So this is Rabbi Yehuda ruining his own shita. He says now a case of bautul tiro. We see that something is restricted from being left over. Despite the fact that it's restricted from left over, it does not require sreifa. Shatok Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was silenced because now they caught him in his own game. Meaning that the lima that he's trying to do or bring is not consistent with his own opinion. His own opinion says that when something's left over, you put it b'kvura. So how can you argue that notar is the paradigm for chametz when notar is not even the paradigm for notar itself? Because in the case of Hashem Talui and Chatat HaSafek, we won't require a Sreifa. Some Rav Yosef, so now you'll have some expressions or common expressions that people use, which is Hainu Damre Inche, this is the idiom that people say. Kafat Dechata Nagra, the spoon that was carved by the carpenter. Begava Nisruf Chardola, in the spoon itself the mustard was burnt, or whether he burnt his tongue on the mustard, meaning that he built it, he made it, and now it comes back and it hurts him by burning his mustard or burning his tongue. Abaye amar, sadno b'sadne yativ. The maker of the stocks, or the stockards, where they tie up the people who are being punished and put into the stock. And what happens when he does something wrong and he's put into the stock? Meaning that his own mechanisms are now used to lock him up. So he's caught in his own work. Midvil yadei mishtalem. He's paid back by the work of his own hands. Rav amar, gira b'girei miktil. Person who makes arrows and then is killed by an arrow, mitzvil yadei mishtalem, is paid back by the work of his own hands. And so too, that's what happened here with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda himself is hurt by his own position. Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's by kvura, by Hashem Taloi and Chatat HaSafek, ruins his ability to learn his position, the Gabei Chametz. And therefore he cannot learn the din from Notar to Chametz because of the fact that he himself, by other places of Notar, says that it's a din of kvura and not a din of Srefa. Okay, we'll stop over here.